हरि ओ सहना ववतु सहनो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So Bhagavat Sandarbha Adhyayana 3 Adhikarna 2, Bhagavan's medium-sized form is omnipotent and all-pervasive. Page 41. This is explained as follows. Manomaya means the Lord is understood by concentration of the very pure mind. Prana Sharira means that he supports all the pranas of the universe. Bharupaha means his sarup is effulgent, shining brightly because of his most auspicious, astonishing spiritual form. Akashatma means his form is subtle and pure like ether and is the cause of all things, Atma. It also means that he reveals himself and reveals other things. He does all actions, or the whole universe is his action, Sarvakama. All enjoyable objects belong to here, Savakarma, Kama. Since all material fragrances and tastes are denied in him, he has all types of faultless, auspicious spiritual fragrances and tastes for his enjoyment. Sarva Ganda Sarva Rasa. He is all that was previously mentioned, Abhyata. He has all auspicious qualities. He is not garrulous, Avakti, since he is beyond all troubles, Anadaraha, and since he has all enjoyable things. Prana Sharira can also mean that his body is dear to the devotees, like their prana. Prana is that which gives life to everything. Thus prana means Brahman. His body is Brahman, Prana Shariraha. So you're bringing out this aspect of how he's transcendental, right? And that the form is the source of all these transcendental qualities. Because we can appreciate, unlimited, you know, the all-pervading, unlimited aspects as absolute, right? And spiritual. But then the question may come up about qualities and form, right? Activities. So one has to appreciate that that's where it starts. It starts from the person. Then the impersonal is a feature of the personal, not the other way around. Right? So from the mundane consciousness, then the Maya bodies will put the personal feature as an extension of the impersonal.
Yes.
Right? And it's mundane.
Yes.
But in actuality, it's the other way around. Right? The personal is the original. The impersonal is an expansion from that.
Yes.
Does that make sense? So that's important. Now, because we're dealing with, see, it's when you use the inductive method to come to the absolute, then you're always going to come up with this mundane aspect that the absolute aspects, the impersonal aspects is higher.
Yes.
You know, shanti is higher, peacefulness is higher, satisfaction is higher.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than, yes, it's beyond the material, it's above the material, but it's not the topmost platform of the absolute. Right? The personal relationships, that's the higher. So, yes. So, therefore, the descending aspect, the deductive, has to be appreciated. Right? But, now in this, that's the interesting thing, is that even though it's deductive, it's still being applied to ourselves. And we're elevating ourselves. Right? So we're going through an elevating process from ourselves to the absolute, but it's being done by the knowledge and understanding of coming from the absolute down to us. That's very important. Otherwise, if we don't use that, we just stick to it, we're elevating ourselves, and it's connected to the Supreme, which is always purifying and always good. But pure devotional service won't come about, right? Until we switch it and look at it the other way. Because otherwise, we're going to the judgment. Our measurement of everything will be according to ourselves, right? And in our conditioned state, that's material, right? So that's the problem, is then our understanding of the absolute will be tainted by that material perspective.
Yes.
So it won't be pure. So it's only when we see as Krishna's the origin of everything. So whatever I'm dealing with, even in my conditioned nature, that's all coming from Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Krishna's the source of that. Like you said, he's all action. He's all objects of, enjoyment. He is all taste. He is all fragrances. Right, he is the cause of all things. He is the pure one. He is all these things that when we see it's coming from him, then the context of us then makes sense, because then it's about him, and then we simply see, well, which aspects of Krishna's potency are we in contact with? Right, it means which is in our field of activities. So then that is used in Krishna's service. Right. You know, it's just like, let us say, you have the wealthy person, and he has a manager. Okay? So the manager engages all of the wealth of that rich person in the activities of the wealthy person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's just a standard thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let us say, for somehow or another, we're the one that's dealing with that money. Now, is it different? Is it any different? Are we supposed to we're going to deal with it in the context of that rich person. The manager is doing some work. Now, if we're given that work to do for the rich person, it's still going to be in that context. So then how am I going to look at it? How would I spend the money? How the rich person want it, or how I want to? You know what I'm saying? I decided, let's have lunch here today. Because I like that, even though the rich man doesn't like that place. Does that make sense? So that's the whole context. Even though it's in the context of the person, that's always going to be purifying. But we have to remember, as purifying will bring us to the level of liberation. Being doing it for the pleasure of that of Krishna, that's what develops bhakti. So we have to be able to see these two aspects. So that's why the inductive elements of what we're doing is going to purify us. But the point is, unless it's coming from the deductive, it won't take you beyond to prema. Right? So how we're given the philosophy and the practices is according to the deductive. So we don't have to worry that we won't get there. But the point is the more we're aware of that, the quicker the system goes. Right? Because it's about pleasing Krishna, then it goes quicker. And if we're, very attached to ourselves and that, it'll go a little slower. Right? So to Krishna, the one life of Brahma is still just 3/4 of a second. But for us, it's a bit longer than that. So, so for Krishna, it's not a problem. You take as long as you want. So we're the one that benefits by doing it, being more focused. Right? So, Priti. Here ends the current Adhikarna, where the medium-sized form of the Lord is asserted as omnipotent and all-pervasive. Next, the transcendental features of the Lord, such as the name, form, qualities, and activities, are further described to substantiate that these features of the Lord are eternal and are a source of bliss, and thus transcendental variety is manifest only to the worshippers who surrender themselves to the lotus feet of the Lord by the process of bhakti. Right, so establishing him as the absolute truth, and establishing his energies, then the natural next step is to establish his name, fame, form, and activities and all this. And then how that will be appreciated by that surrender. He is the source of bliss, right? Because we're looking for happiness, but he's the source of that happiness. Whatever it is. So if we connect with him, that's where the actual happiness is. Right? Okay. Adhikarna 3. Transcendental attributes of Bhagavan. Anuchedas 46 to 53. Adhikarna Prakashita. The previous Adhikarna shed light on the eternality and omnipotent power of the Lord's personal form. Next, in the present Adhikarna, the author further affirms the transcendental nature of the Lord's attributes, such as his name, qualities, activities, etc. Right? Because the first things we're having to accept that he's the absolute truth. If that's there and all these things are there, he's not mundane in any way. Then when we talk about his name, form, qualities, and pastimes, then it's going to be, that's going to be easier.
Yes.
Right? Means you can talk about those others, but you're still going to have the same conversation. You know, whether this is this, whether this is that. And it, by that process, you will learn. But the difference is the taste of appreciating that name, form, qualities, and pastimes won't be as strong. Because during the time of tasting, you're going to be, you know, trying to remove doubts.
Yes, yes.
Right? Because you can only taste if there's no doubt.
Yes, of course.
Right? You know, if I'm eating something and I really like it and you've never seen it before, never, you know, or that, or, you know, you're it looks strange or something, then I'll say, oh, have a taste. You know, but that first taste is like this, that, you're trying to remove doubts and this little bit of tasting, I don't know, well, it's not so bad. And all. So it's not that you're actually tasting it, even though you're putting it in your mouth and the sensation is on the tongue. You're basically removing doubts. You know what I'm saying? Once doubts are removed, now you can eat. Maybe the second bite, you go, okay, so then the second bite, now you'll appreciate. Right? So then the acharyas then, by going through this, by showing us from how the person is the absolute, how the person controls all the energies, and how the person has his name, form, qualities, and pastimes that are beyond these other two. Then that just brings us up. So we're being elevated through, we're being elevated, but it's knowledge coming down from the person. The person is absolute. The person is in control of all energy. The person has pastimes. Does that make sense? So that way the two together, it's working. Right? So that we're interested, that's nice, but still we get interested, that becomes dynamic because we meet devotees. Devotees are coming from the Lord. So if we're interested like that, just there is no ascending process to reach the Lord. But if there's an interest, actual sincere, you come in contact with the devotees who are in that descending process. Right? And then by meeting them, we hear about the Lord. And then we get attracted and we get elevated. Right? So it's not that by it's descending, we have no position. Right? Because we could think as well, if it's ascending, it includes me. And then, of course, I'll include the Lord in there. But the point is, are we the source of the Lord? Are we the maintenance of the Lord? No. But if we look at it the other way, if we count from the Lord, the descending, are we not part and parcel of the Lord? Is he not, everything that we work with, that we call ourselves, is that not Krishna's potency? Right. So then that means that if you have Krishna, that includes us. But when you start with us, it doesn't necessarily mean we'll include the Lord. We'll only include what's convenient for us. So that's why this importance of switching the mentality. Right? That's the whole point being brought out in the Sarva Dharma Parityaja. You're switching the mentality. So you're seeing from Krishna first, then you're bringing it down to your position. Right? And then from that, when that understanding of Krishna comes down to our position, from that, now being connected, now we can elevate ourselves because we have a relationship.
Yes. So, Maharaj, this is going beyond our nature to want to know Krishna by inquisitiveness.
Yes, it's going by beyond, because inquisitiveness will just be, we have some questions, we want them answered.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not a matter of actually knowing God. That's the difference between the jigyasu and the jnani.
Mm-hmm.
Someone who's looking for spiritual knowledge and this and that, that's an inquisitive person.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Much of the time we take it that the jnani is the one looking for the spiritual. No, it's the jigyasu. The jnani already understands there's the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And by the Lord being there, then we understand how He is the controller of everything. Everything's coming from Him. He's the support of everything. So that gratefulness is there. And therefore, we want to surrender and serve the Lord.
Yes.
That's the jnani.
Yes.
Because that means He has actual knowledge.
Yes.
The other one has a need for knowledge.
Yes.
The other one is applying His knowledge in the Lord's service.
Yes.
So, that means any one of the Arthi and Jigyasu, they can come to the platform of jnani.
Mm-hmm.
That means that's the natural position. Because
yes.
from that platform, that's what will get you to the Madhyama platform.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because then you're fixed in devotional
yes.
service. Because by the jnani means now you're taking up the process of bhajana kriya properly.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That it's important. You're doing it out of service to the Lord, out of gratefulness to the Lord.
Right attitude.
Yes, so it'll have that more ritualistic aspect,
mm-hmm.
you know, rules and regulations. But the point is that's where it is. So basically speaking, if the jnana sukriti is enough, that let's say someone like someone's born into a family of devotees, right? And so then they may appreciate Krishna's position and want to serve. Right? That will be the jnani position.
Yes.
But if you're coming from a background that has no contact with devotional service, right? You know, it means, yes, then you're going to be in these first three categories
yes.
because you don't know God, you don't know anything like this. It's only if you know God and know what benefits you're getting from God, then you can be a jnani.
Yes.
Does that make some sense? You know, so it's out of service. It's not for Artartarti and Jigyasu that you're worshipping.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Yeah?
So Maharaj, actually I see that in that course the consciousness we elevate our consciousness by putting out some doubts at least, and understand the position of jnani to go to a pure devotion.
Yes, yes. Yes, that's a natural thing, because then, see, is that when you remove doubts, then you start to practice.
Yes.
So that would be bhajana kriya.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So in performing bhajana kriya, that's then where, then you're going to be trying to please Krishna. Trying to know, understand, please Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Out of, you appreciate his position, your position, that relationship. Does that make sense? So that's basically what. So if one holds on to, you know, Artartarti and Jigyasu,
yes, yes.
it will be a stumbling block.
Yes.
That is connected to Krishna, that's always going to be purifying.
Yes, yes.
But at the same time, since our goal is pure devotion,
yes, yes.
then after some point it gets in the way.
Yes, yes.
You know?
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So, because then if we keep that attachment, we're worried about facilities and money or, you know, position, authority, those things that make us feel confident in that. Or we want to get rid of all the miseries that are there in that. So in other words, you see one's more karma, one's more jnana,
mm-hmm.
kind of liberation. Then you have the jigyasu, it's just about knowledge.
Yes, yes.
You know, the first two are activities, basically, and the second, that last one will be... Be the just about the knowledge aspect. You want to know, and it's interesting. So, you know, you read the books, you read this, you read that, you read so many things because they're interesting. So you read Prabhupada's books because it's there, but when other books come up,
yes.
by other, you know, you're happy to read those too because
yes.
you're just interested.
Yes.
So doesn't have the focus of the jnani, where it's about that dedication to the Lord due to gratefulness.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so when that becomes stable, right, then that becomes the Madhyama. So Nishta Bhajana Kriya. So this would be more the Anishta Bhajana Kriya. Right? But you're fixed. You're practicing Bhajana Kriya. You're committed to it. And so as you remove the Anartas, and the Anartas are Artartha Jigyasu, right? You know, those are basically our anarthas. So when those are removed, that brings you then to the Madhyama platform. So then you go beyond that. Right? And then the Madhyama platform will bring you to Bhava. Right? Bhava to Prana. So, yeah. Before elaborating on the transcendental attributes, the author first substantiates that the Lord's form is beyond the material conception, so that one does not compare his qualities with that of an ordinary jiva, encaged in the material world. Initially, it is explained that the Lord is without material gunas, without inferior qualities. Vishnu Purana says, Bhagavan means that person who is endowed with six auspicious qualities. End quote. The Lord is pervading everywhere in the creation as Brahman, and as Paramatma is smaller than the atom. His form is beyond measurement. Apari ganya dhamne. This implies that though normally a form has limits, his form, which manifests through his achinti shakti, has no limits. Then, through the prayers of Gajendra, it is established that the Lord is beyond the gross and subtle natures of the material world. While praying for being rescued by the Supreme Entity, Gajendra addresses that Supreme Entity as the one who is not a human, devata, animal, male, female, neuter, and who is beyond the gross or subtle matter. None of the devatas came to rescue Gajendra because they knew that he was not addressing them. Thus, the Supreme Lord Hari, who is beyond any material designation, appeared to shower mercy on Gajendra. From this instance, it can be concluded that the form of the Lord is beyond all the material qualities or conceptions. One may doubt, if the Lord is beyond the material conception, then how can the conditioned jiva, such as Gajendra, could see his form? In reply to this, right, because you were making the point that he's beyond, so you can't understand him with the senses and the mind and intelligence. He is only by his mercy can you understand. So then the doubt would, you know, and he's, because he's transcendental, he's beyond the senses. So he can't be perceived of them. So then the doubt comes up, but then how is he seeing? So then what he's seeing is that material. Right? Because that's the Mayavadi's idea. If you can see with the senses, that means it has to be within the modes of nature. And of course you're taking it on the topmost platform, so then you're taking it in the mode of goodness. So the best manifestation of the mode of goodness. Right? Coming from knowledge, right? So that makes Ishwara. But the problem is they still categorize the Lord within the mundane. So, because if we're looking at mundane logic, if you can't, if we do, because we'll say it, oh, with my intelligence I can understand. Right? You know, because we're based on that and it's by our endeavor and all that. In other words, through the karma and all that, we can get things done. But then we see that if we accept that, okay, they're beyond and it can't be and it's only a revelation and all that, then when we say, but he can be seen, perceived with the senses, then we have to say, well, then that has to be mundane. You understand why this point comes up? Because the one we're going to fight, I can see, and when we accept that we can't see, then if we're saying the gender is seeing, how is he seeing? So it must be mundane. Right? So that's the thing. So when you deal with a point, you remove the you know, the whatever's the specific angle on it, it always has that other side. So you have to deal with both. So that's why sometimes it appears we're dealing with different points, because the angles would be different. Right? You know, like Prabhupada with Varnashram, is that human life begins with Varnashram. Like below that one, it's just sophisticated animal life. Right? And then saying the importance of that, and the importance of Varnashram and all that. But having said that, then one could say, well, Varnashram is the thing, and that's what makes devotional service. And then he's pointing out, no, unless it's engaged in Krishna service, it's a waste of time. Right? Does that make sense? So then you get two parties. One that says, see, you're not even human unless you're following Varnashram. And so, you know, that, and then humans can do devotional service and this and that, blah. So unless you're doing Varnashram, you're not really situated as a devotee. Right? And the other party, you know, they take it to extreme now. And the other party says, oh, it's rejected here. You know, without connection to devotional service, it's a waste of time. So I don't want to waste my time. I'm just going to do devotional service.
Yes.
You know, so that's the difficulty that comes up, is that you have to deal with both sides, so you have to explain both. So that's why there's being a confusion, because it appears to be opposites. They appear to be contradictory, but they're not, because it's all resolved in the Lord. Right? Is that the point? Is it's all about the Lord. So it's not about the Lord, but the point is devotional service means you're engaging the senses in the service of the Lord of the senses. So how do you engage the senses? How do you define what's the appropriate engagement of the senses? Right? That's going to be Varnashram's going to explain. Depending upon your position, that's how the senses are engaged. So that's why it's there. It's the tool. It's just like if you're going to cook, depending upon the preparation, you use particular pots and pans because they can do a particular function. Right? So that's how you have a class to be taught, then you're going to look at a Brahmin. You have money to be made, you're going to look at the Vaishya. You have music to be sung, you look at the Shudra. Does that make sense? You know. So that's then what you're doing. That you're just choosing according to that. That's why then you know what they are, then you know how to engage yourself, and you know how to be engaged in the various activities. And you can tell the difference between what's Varna and what's Ashram. Because that's also a big confusion. It's obvious. You say, what's the Varna, is that, what's the Ashram? It's okay. But when it's applied, they try to apply it the same. When it's different. Because one's making money, it's a social thing, and the other is living your life. Right? So you're trying to get beyond this and from all angles remove the doubts. So it's through vichar, all these different angles are being given. So that's why then there's these differences here. It seems like why it's being said over and over and over again, because the angle's a little different. Because you're addressing a different doubt. Same thing, but a different doubt.
Yes. Doubts are just
tiny. Yes. Yes, yes. It's just like this. Okay, let us say we have a sweet. Okay? Now, then that sweet, there's sugar. Right? So for one person, it's going to be, the doubt is it organic? The other one's going to be,
is there enough
volume? That's the Brahmin chart. Yeah, so everyone's going to have their doubt, you know, or someone else's, you know, is this not too much sugar in it, because sugar's bad for you. Because, see, when you're dealing with those who don't like sugar, it doesn't matter if it's organic or not organic. And when people are into organic or not organic, it's not about what it is. It's just, it has to be organic. If it's organic, it's good.
Yes.
Like that. And then, as we said, then for the Brahmachari, is the volume appropriate? You know.
How many buckets are there?
Yeah, it's like that. There's, you know, 5 Brahmachari, so there's 2.5 buckets. So, yeah, it's okay. Yeah. Half bucket each. You know, because some of them eat a little more, some eat a little less. It works out. That makes sense.
Is it sweet enough?
Yeah, if it's sweet enough, that's going to be there. That's going to be the Guru Kuli's question.
Can you store it?
Huh?
Can you store it?
Well, it just depends on if there's anything left. If there were 3 buckets, then now there's a question of storing it. Since there's only 2.5, then that's only enough for everyone to eat. Yeah, I always remember that. After the Sunday feast, you know, the next day, Temple Commander would go through all the Brahmachari's lockers, because everyone had halava or samosas or something, you know, ladus in their locker, you know, hidden in the back, you know, like that. So they'd drag it all out and distribute it at breakfast, you know, so everyone would get, you know. So. Yes. So, does it store is a very important question. And for how many days? There you go. His form is beyond measurement. Ardi, Apari Ganya Dhamne. This implies that though normally a form has limits, his form, which manifests through his Achintya Shakti, has no limits. Then, through the prayers of Gajendra, it is established that because if you're dealing with Krishna consciousness, right? You come in contact with it, it's something completely new. So now, if you're dealing with Krishna consciousness, something new, and this point here is that his form is transcendental, and even though it has a seemingly limited size, it is unlimited. You know what I'm saying? So it doesn't matter at that point because everything doesn't make sense. So you throw this in and that, and then you see with some time, then it all makes sense. But if we don't deal with these things, then we have what we are conscious of. What is, you know, how much of Krishna consciousness we relate to. Then if you come across these things, it becomes more difficult to deal with. Because we already have an idea, this is how it is. Right? You know, or we don't even consider these concepts.
So, Mark, if in our training it's not clear, it makes more complication are coming in our
program. Yes, it comes later. For the first 3-4 years you won't notice it.
Yes.
But after that, then it will.
Yes.
So the whole idea is that these things, because as you go and get purified, you're dealing with subtler and subtler aspects.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've been trained in these subtle aspects, then it makes it just so much more easy.
Yes.
You can define what's the difference between pure and mixed.
Yes. Yes.
You know, what's spiritual and what's material. Because
yes. Yes.
That's what the first verse in Bhagavatam says. Real knowledge is being able to distinguish the difference between material and spiritual.
Yes.
So,
Maharaj, because we are conditioned by time and space, that's why, like this, it said that normally a form has limits. We think the form has limits.
Right, yes, yes.
That's the problem.
Yes, we're thinking like that. Because we're using material intelligence and we're used to material philosophies.
Yes.
Right? And so these material philosophies are going to be based within the concept of time and space.
Yes.
So they're going to try to, that's what the Mayavadi philosophy is doing. It's trying to explain transcendental within the concepts of time and space. So they can accept that there's something beyond, but that means all things that we know within time and space can't be there. It just has to be a nothingness.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the, yeah.
This idea, this point that we can't, you know, measure Krishna's form, no limit.
Yes.
Is that why in the Vedic scheme of measurement, the measures are based upon an individual form, an original Krishna's form, like angulas, hustis, like this?
Oh, I would think so. But the point is that it's personal, because it's like this. If you're going to build something, and according to Vastu, it has to have certain proportions. So you can make the building as big or small as you want, but the proportions are going to be according to whoever's building it, right? Either the person on behalf who is being built, or the person who's building it, or the person who comes in and advises how it should be done, you know, the expert in the field of Vastu. So either of these three measurements. So once you establish the measurements, you do. Now, where do you get those measurements? Everybody has them with them. Right, you don't have to rely upon having a tape measure, you know, and some arbitrary, because like a meter, it's an arbitrary thing, right? You know, they base it on something that seems scientific, but it's still an arbitrary thing. So that's the difficulty, is that you know, the time, the space, you know, the weight, all these different things, they're just, it's arbitrary. You know, it works, people can relate to it, but this other is, it's something that you yourself can do. You know, so it makes it accessible to everybody. While the other, then it makes it less. It's personal. Yeah. While the others, then it'll be impersonal.
Also, Maharaj, I was contemplating on this point the other day. It's mostly based on equity. Like, for example, if you compare two different places,
because of their, there is certain facility and all, they can produce something and then they can sell. And if they have control of the other place or the other country, then they impose that on the other country rather than sharing it. And mm-hmm. similarly, when it comes to individual context, if a person is of a particular height and a particular size, he can do only particular work,
mm-hmm.
and then he can put only particular amount of energy. And mm-hmm. based on that, it's like mostly the battery system is all about how much an individual can do, how much time you can put, that much is the value of that product, or mm-hmm. if you can sell it.
So it doesn't have the individuality.
Rather than having something like the absolute standard is all about somebody made it so that it benefits them. And,
yeah. So if it's the absolute, it's about Krishna, then it makes it better. Yeah, because Krishna is also described in, you know, according to these things. Because in the Silpa Shastra, when you deal with the deities, then there's exact measurements you're doing. And it's based on that form.
I was thinking of a narration of the flute sizes, how so many angulas.
Yes. But also just Krishna's height. So it's whatever the height is, that's the proportion of the finger. So it doesn't matter how big or small you make the deity, the proportion of the deity will be the same.
Yes.
Okay. You know, like babies, they're small, but their heads are really big compared to the rest of their body.
Yes.
Like that. So these, you're going to get these things. So then the Shastra will say. Yeah. So that way everything could be measured. Even before, we just, was a few days ago. All the Pradesh was all about, what were we measuring? What was being measured? Oh, the banana leaf plates? No.
The super salt.
That's there. But that was... Oh, it was talking about the super salt. How big he is, yes. Yeah, because he found out that... Because some places you see it says from the tip of the thumb to the little finger. But then it also, I was mentioning, from the thumb to the index finger. And I always went with this one because, you know, that was the one that worked in the measurement. But for many people, they're the same. Yeah. For me, it's not. It's different. But for a lot of devotees, it's the same. See? So it's whichever one will be the half hand. So if it means if that one works, see, so me it'll come short. But if you use the other one, then it comes out proper, you know, because it's up to the little finger. Like
that. Thank you, Mark.
Yeah. So interesting. One may doubt, quote, if the Lord is beyond the material conception, then how can the conditioned jiva, such as Gajendra, could see his form? In reply to this, the next Anucheda 48, explains that the Lord, by his own sweet will, shows his transcendental form to his devotees who pray for his mercy. The form of the Lord, which can't be perceived by material vision, is relished by the devotees whose vision is anointed with love for him. Thus, the form as seen by the devotees of the Lord is not a material form, as all the material forms are rejected in the Lord. Having thus established that the form of the Lord is beyond the material modes, the next Anucheda 49, confirms the transcendental nature of the birth and activities of the Lord. When it is said that the Lord attains birth, activities, and qualities, it does not mean that he attains the faults in those qualities, since that is contradictory to Shruti, and the Lord is established as the highest spiritual entity. Though his birth and activities appear and disappear with a beginning and an end, in some places portions of his birth and activities end, in other places they do not end, and yet in other places they begin. Since there is no break in continuity of their performance, the birth and activities exist eternally. That means this universe is, it may be, it's just starting here, but, you know, in the next year, it's continuing. And then the previous one, it appears to have ended. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. Yeah. After proving that the Lord's birth and activities are eternal, next Anucheta establishes that the Lord's form is a manifestation of bliss arising from his own Swarup Shakti. The senses of the Lord are the source and shelter of the Shaktis, of even the primordial demigods who control the senses of the Jivas. And hence, the Lord doesn't depend on Maya Shakti for manifestation of his form, but does it through his own Shakti. Right? Since his Shakti is what the demigods use to control the living entities, so their senses work, he's the source of that. So he's not dependent upon that material Shakti. He being the source, he manifests himself as he pleases. It can mean those. It can mean also just your. You just means can also possibly be meaning the main demigods or something. Because you have the demigods who are there in posts, but you also have those who elevate themselves up there to just enjoy themselves there. Yes.
This is spoken in the context that all of our conditioned souls' senses are controlled. There is a particular demigod who controls them.
Okay.
So in that context, whether that demigod is controlling Krishna's senses or also or not, that is the doubt that is removed.
Mm. Yeah. So it's just meaning that the demigod's there. But we know that that's coming before, but that's the metaphysical concept. The direct then will be the particular demigods. Therefore, the senses of the Lord are the form of bliss and are not the product of material energy as assumed by the Mayavadis. Finally, in the Anucheta 52 and 53, it is concluded that there is no contradiction in the scriptures stating the non-existence and existence of name, form, qualities of the absolute truth, as both the scriptures are pointing to the single tattva, which is non-material but possess spiritual names, forms, and qualities that are revealed to the qualified jiva who worships the Supreme Lord with love and devotion. Hence, this Adhikarana shows that Bhagavan's transcendental attributes, such as his name, form, qualities, and activities, cannot be understood, I guess, by anyone except those who attain his mercy by the performance of or by performance of devotional service. Anucheta 46, Vritti. In order to express the transcendental characteristics of the Lord's form, his qualities, and his pastimes, it is first established in this Anucheta that the form, qualities, and activities of the Lord are not material. Right? Because you want to establish and discuss his name, form, qualities, pastimes, but you first have to establish they're not material. Otherwise, then we'll conceive of them in that way, we won't get the proper understanding. In this way, the Lord's personal form has been established as eternal and all-pervading. Sridhar Swami explains, saying that the Lord, who does not manifest, has become manifest, Brahma thought of the Lord as eternal and all-pervading. I offer my repeated respects to the Lord, who has no destruction of his birth and actions, who is without material qualities, but full of auspicious qualities as Bhagavan, whose happiness is greater than that of liberation, who is Paramatma, smaller than an atom, and who has an immeasurable form. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.6.8. Uddhariti. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura. The Lord does not have a destruction of his birth and maintenance. This means that forms like Krishna and Rama have eternal birth and maintenance. That maintenance means that his form perform activities, since no conscious being exists without action. However, their actions are also eternal. The Lord is without material gunas, without inferior qualities. Vishnu Purana says he has all auspicious qualities. Bhagavan means that person who is endowed with six auspicious qualities. The Lord is also Brahman, an ocean of the happiness of Nirvana. He is also Paramatma, smaller than the atom. His form is beyond measurement. Apari Ganya Dhamne. Therefore, I offer respects to him. This implies that though normally a form has limits, his form manifests through his Achintya Shakti. O best of persons, O Supreme Director, your form is always worthy of worship for those who desire the highest benefit through the Vedic and Pancharatrika methods. I clearly see the three worlds in you, the form of the universe, Srimad Bhagavatam 8:6-9. He explains these verses as follows. The Lord's form only appears. His birth is not like our birth. He does not have a birth, maintenance, and destruction. Why? He has no material gunas, agunaya. He has a form of incomparable happiness, experienced in liberation. He is smaller than the smallest. Anor animne, since it cannot be understood. His form cannot be measured. All this is not impossible because he is inconceivable to our minds. Mahanu bhavaya. He concludes that the Lord's form is eternal and immeasurable. O best of the Puranas, O maintainer, this form of yours is to be worshipped always by the best methods, the Vedic and Tantric. This form is thus not new. The Lord may say, you devatas are famous as being worthy of worship. That is true. But all of them are included in worship of the Lord. Oh, ooh. Clearly, ha, I see. Oh. I see us, along with the three worlds, in you, Anusmin, since you are the form of the universe. Thus your form is not limited.
It mentions over here that he is smaller than the smallest.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes scriptures also mention that he is subtler than the subtlest. Are they the same?
Yeah. But it's just like the primary creation. That's subtle, no?
Mm-hmm.
And so he's the source of that. So he's subtler than that. You know what I'm saying? It's all. The point is, it sees the origin of everything, so everything's going to work out.
So,
yeah, because the atom is there as substance, and then he's there because that's smaller. So the smaller aspect, subtle, generally means it's more fine. Just because you're smaller doesn't necessarily mean it's more fine, right? Like you can have a kid. They're smaller than an adult, it doesn't mean they're more refined than an adult. You know, or let's say you have a Chihuahua, it's not that it's more refined than a Great Dane. Right? Not at all, right?
Maharaj, there it's mentioned that Lord is pursued by the best methods, Vedic and Tantric. Middle.
Yeah.
So, this, what is this Vedic and Tantric?
What is this Vedic and Tantric? Vedic means it's based on the Vedic mantras. You use the Vedic mantras in worship. And Tantra means then it's you're using rituals that use bead syllables and other things like that. Like Pancharatra is a combination of both. But you do have pure Vedic systems and pure Tantric systems. Well, we use Pancharatra, which is a mix of both. Or you can mean it, that Vedic means your mantras, and Tantric means your actions. In any case, there's always going to be mantras, and there's going to be the ritual. And then here is he's with the O clearly. Because the demigods we see in the Samveda is always using the term ha-u, ha-u, like that. So ha is clearly, and u means o. Yeah, means you also, there gets known as the uha-gyanam, uha-gyanam. But generally in the things is ha-u, 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 like that, so. Like that. Thus, your form is not limited. Nirvana, Sukarnavaya, actually means that the Lord is an ocean of happiness compared to the happiness of mere liberation. Because liberation means getting out of a difficult position. So then, you know, so we don't like to be in a difficult position because we want to be in a happy position, right? But the point is getting out of a difficult position doesn't mean now you're in a happy position. It just means you're out of the difficult position. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So that's the position that's there, is that he is the form of Ananda. So he's actually bliss. Right? Then on top of that, then you're going to have that means he's beyond liberation. Because liberation simply means giving up the mundane.
Mm-hmm.
So Dhruva says, the bliss for your servant available from meditating on your lotus feet or from hearing about your pastimes from the devotees is not available in your form of greatness known as Brahman. Right? Because the happiness of Brahman is there, it's beyond the material. But it doesn't compare to the bliss of him as the form of bliss. That Ananda, that interaction, right? Because we say you have an existence that has to be doing something. Right? So it's beyond that. What to speak of the happiness for those who fall from the pleasures of Swarga? Right? So Brahman is beyond. Beyond that is the transcendental bliss. And let alone those who have fallen from the pleasures of Swarga.
Yes.
Right? Because Brahman realization is above that of Swarga. And if you've already finished your time in Swarga and fallen back here.
Yes.
So in other words, how much happiness we have. We know above that is Swarga. Above that is Brahman. But beyond that is the Anandamaya.
Right?
By mentioning that the Lord is smaller than the smallest and also is immeasurable, it is shown that he includes all dimensions by his achintya shakti. Maha anubhavaya. Riti, the next anucheta discusses that the Lord's form is beyond gross and subtle matter. Anucheta 47. Two verses illustrate the Lord is beyond gross and subtle. The Lord is not a devata, demon, human, animal, female, neuter, male, or any other living being. He is not the gunas or karma. He is not gross or subtle. He remains after everything is negated. May the unlimited Lord remain glorious. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.3.24. Thus, when the devatas, who identify themselves by characteristic marks, did not come to rescue Gajendra, who described the Lord beyond material perception, the Lord himself, the personification of all devatas, appeared, since he is the Atma of all beings. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.3.30. Udvriti. Srila Prabhupada. From the description of Gajendra, he apparently was aiming at the supreme authority. Although he did not know who the supreme authority is, he conjectured, there is a supreme authority who is above everything. End quote. Under the circumstances, the Lord's various expansions, such as Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Chandra, and Indra, all thought, Gajendra is not asking our help, he is asking the help of the supreme, who is above all of us. Srimad Bhagavatam 8.3.24 indicates that since the Lord is the cause of all causes, he cannot be included among the devatas. He is devoid of a sattvika nature and material body. Right? Well, the demigods, they have. He is neither male nor female. Right? Because he's both. He's the potency of all of that. So he's male, he's female, he's neuter. So that means he's being the source of that is beyond that. You know, so I guess that solves the problem of, you know, the arguments over, you know, is God, you know, male or female. So he's, yeah. But here it's also thrown in neuter. He's not any of these. He is devoid of all material qualities. Thus he is not neuter either. He is not any material creature. He is not the gunas, the cause of all material forms. And he is not karma, composed of piety and sin. Since he is the instigator of the gunas and karma, what more can be said? Right. So he's beyond piety, impiety, you know, karma, knowledge, all, because he's the source of them. is not gross, sat, or subtle, asat, matter, since his form is self-manifesting. Beyond all material manifestations. He remains when everything is negated. Nishedha, seshaha. But by maya, he becomes unlimited forms. Aseshaha. May he manifest jayat tat in order to free me. When the devatas, such as Brahma, so that's the point is that he's beyond everything, because otherwise you go, okay, he's not material, he's spiritual, but he's beyond that also. Being the source of spiritual, he's beyond that. You know, you categorize him as spiritual, meaning not material, but he's actually beyond. Because right? The spiritual existence comes from him, it's based on him. Right? Yes?
Sometimes we hear different kinds of prayers offered by different devotees. Some describe the Lord as non-material. Some describe his spiritual qualities. Mm. And some combine both. So what is it, you know, why do they do that in a different manner?
Yeah, because it's a matter of each individual that's offering prayers, then they have their particular contemplations on the Lord and practices and what they realize in that, then that's what they'll discuss. You know, it may also be from the area that they come from, you know, what by their background or position, then what qualities they would naturally notice. Like this. So it'll be very individual. As there's each individual is unique, then their prayers are also going to be different. That's why then it says in the Pancharatrik system, when you're doing deity worship, that you're worshiping the Lord in prayers, and that you're going, that'll be two. One, it'll be by reciting prayers of the acharyas, and the other will be your own heartfelt understanding of that. Right? So both are there, because the one is the standard you're trying to get to, the other is what realization you're at now. So. Yes.
It seems here that the devata, they know the position of the Lord.
Yes.
And they don't, I can say, make problem with that. You know?
No. Because that's what makes them suras, is that they are surrendered to the Lord. Mm-hmm. They're devotees. Mm-hmm. The 33 million demigods, they're all devotees. Mm-hmm. But they tend to be a little bit more neophyte.
Yes.
You know, because they're attached to the karma aspect specifically. Though a few of them are dealing in beyond that. In yon. But the point is that they know the Lord's position, but being neophyte, they tend to forget.
Yes.
But as soon as there's a difficulty, they remember.
Yes.
Right? You know, so it's just like you say, you know, here you take a neophyte devotee, they're devoted to Krishna, but it doesn't mean when they get into their affairs at home or business or that, they don't forget Krishna. Mm-hmm. But as soon as there's a problem, immediately they remember Krishna.
Yes. Yes.
So that's the demigods.
Yes.
They're devotees.
Yes.
The asuras, they may have similar kind of potencies and facilities, but they're not devotees.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they know about God, they're not devoted to God. Like we see, some of them know nicely about God. You know, it's like after Bali Maharaj's, you know, that whole pastime with Bali Maharaj, then Vamana is asking Shukracharya, was he wrong, you know, in offering everything to the Lord? And Shukracharya says no. Means that's what the Shastra says. Everything should be offered to the Lord. So that was there. But in so doing, then his immediate material facilities and all that would be lost. And so since he's, you know, the guru of the demons, he's to ensure that they're enjoying themselves all the time. Otherwise, why do they want him around? Right? You know? So therefore, he was opposing. But in actuality, then that's the correctness. He just didn't think he was on that platform. Because if he gives up everything, then he'll lament afterwards, and then now Sukracharya has to deal with that. Right? But he gave up everything and surrendered and attained a glorious position. So they know. It's not that they don't know, it's just like in Nectar Devotion it's explaining that, you know, when it's talking about, I think, one of Krishna's qualities of being reliable, that the demons sleep at night peacefully because they don't leave their doors open, because they know that the Lord's not going to come and attack them if they don't do something stupid. So as long as they behave themselves, he's not going to bother them. So they know his position, they know his authority. So that's why it's then said madness when their pride goes beyond, for then they think they are God or better than God in that. So then you see, but most of the demigods, it's just they're fighting over facilities. They just, you know, they have facilities, but even though their facilities are better, the demigods' facilities are more prestigious. You know, so they want every. It's not that when they conquer the heavenly planets, they don't have their hellish regions also. Right? You know, they're going to have both. So they're going to have the facility and prestige. So, that's generally what they're fighting over. But, you know, a few of them, then they're opposed to, like Hiranyakashipu or Robin, then they're opposed to the Lord. But that, even amongst the demons, that's more rare. Right? They just don't think about the Lord. He's not part of their plan. He's just part of something that needs to get done. You know, it's just like the local, you know, officer who signs, you know, permissions. He's not part of your consideration. He's just part of, you know, a process that has to be gone through. So it's not that you care about him. Well, the demigods want to please the Lord. No, they'll forget. But the demons, they may know that you have to deal with the Lord, but only in as much as gets things done. Right? And then now and again they get so proud, you know, vena, that they think they can act outside of. When the devatas such as Brahma, who identified themselves with various forms, Vividha, Lina, Bidha, Bhimana, did not come to Gajendra, who had described the Lord devoid of a devata form, Nirvisesham, since he is the form of happiness as Paramatma, for all of them, Akhilatmakatvat, and more than that, by his Maya, is happiness for unlimited beings, Nikilanam. The Lord, who is all the devatas, made his appearance. Right, so he's all the devatas. They're just the individual devata. And so all their 33 million different varieties of potencies and authority come from him. He is all of that. So he is the form of all the devas. That's why if you worship him, you worship all the devas. Right? You know, it's just like, let us say, if I greet you, then that includes your hands and feet. But let's say I just come up, I'm not noticing you, and I just only deal with one finger. Oh, how are you today? Yeah, I haven't seen you for a long time. You're sitting there going, what's going on here? You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point, is that way then the demigod, it's not efficient, and it also, it's okay, that finger, what about the other finger? Yeah. You know, and then the other hand, and then you've got toes, you know, so that way then, you know, the demigods get, they're not very pleased. Demigod worshippers don't actually please anybody. That's right. Some sense? Yeah. So, when we're taking that upasana means worshipping the Lord, who is the sum total of all the demigods, He is all the demigods. Then Upasana Kanda, then with that we're talking about bhakti, means devotion, means the process of worship, as opposed to just the process for ritualistic performances and the process of speculation. Right? But at other times you'll see, as we'll also say, is karma, I mean, we'll mention all three. Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and Upasana Kanda, that they're a problem, because Upasana means worship of the demigods. It means you're focusing on the worship of the demigods, while others are worshiping, focusing more on the rituals and all that, connected to the demigods, of course, but to elevate themselves and get better material facilities. So there's a difference does that make sense? One's doing all the yajnas, all the rituals and all that. Demigods are being worshipped. It's not so much about the worship of the demigods that the ritual, and that ritual says, worship this demigod. Well, the Upasana Kanda means specifically they worship demigods. They do that worship trying to please them, and by getting their blessings, then they're elevated to what position they're looking for. Does that make sense? That's the difference. Though it's also karma.
But now, when they say they worship the demigod, they worship all the demigods.
They worship whichever particular ones they want benefit from. Because they can't. How do you worship 33 million demigods? Right? You know, it's like you don't have enough time in this lifetime even to do one puja. Right?
So is karma kind of the activity that deals with, is that more like one ashram?
No, they're all within that. That means there are different aspects of the Varnashram Dharma is the, you could say, the social system that all these other varieties of religions can fit together. Because you as an individual may have so many aspects of religion you're following. Someone's austere, someone's studying, someone's giving in charity, someone's, you know, like this. But then the difficulty comes up is, now how does everybody who's following a religion work together? That's Varnashram. So in Varnashram, all the other religious activities have their place. Because Varnashram is how to engage all the individuals, you know, that follow the Veda. And so naturally then, whichever particular religious processes that they're following, then has to be able to be accommodated by Varnashram. So that's why when you say Varnashram or Dharma, it includes all the other ones in that context. Though, technically, you can separate them off. You know, so you have lists of, you know, 12 or 18 or, you know, so many, depending upon, because when you have one, it has so many subsections. So you can either just mention the main one and the subsections are included. So depending what you want to establish, then they will mention a certain list. So that's why some places it'll have different numbers of the religious processes.
So Upasana Kanda deals with the worship.
The worship of the demigod.
Karma Kanda deals with?
Basically with the yajnas and those kind of, more ritualistic. While the Upasana is more with worship. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also the activities like giving charity, making all the nice things, all those done for the Karma Kanda, right?
Yes. That's the thing, is it accommodates all these. So karma and jnana, they're all accommodated within there. It's just that it's a specific that they're worshipping the demigod. So they may not be doing yajnas, they'll just do puja every day. You know, it's just like, let's say in Calcutta, they do Durga Puja. Mm-hmm. They don't do a yajna and all that, they just do the worship. Right? While you have ritualistic brahmanas and all that, they're going to do yajnas and other such technical points like that. It's just a matter of which way you're trying to get your material benefits.
So both of them are aiming for some proper result.
Both of them are?
Karma Kandis and Upasana Kandis.
Are both?
They have some desires to be fulfilled.
They have desires. Well, also the Jnana Kanda, they have desires. It means all three of them are material. The Jnanis want liberation, it's material. So they're all materialists. So the material, you know, the Maya bodies, the Buddhists, they're all materialists.
So isn't Karma Kanda is general and Upasana Kanda is specific? Can you say that?
Specific means it's using the technique of worship, because the point is someone may be doing the Karmakanda and they focus on specific kinds of yajñas. You know, they put more emphasis on, let's say, you know, Indra, or more emphasis on the forefathers, or like this. But it doesn't mean that it's that. It just means that they're using these ritualistic techniques more. While then Upasana Kanda will be using the techniques of puja, the 16 items, more. Does that make sense?
Yes, sir.
Means it's all one thing, but it's just a matter of where the emphasis is. Like, there's knowledge in karma, and there's knowledge in upasana, but it's not the emphasis. And in jnana, the emphasis is that. It doesn't mean that they don't have some ritual or some worship. It's just the emphasis is not there. That form that appeared should correspond to the form that Gajendra described in his prayers. Mm-hmm. He had prayed for the appearance of a form, but a form which is beyond gross and subtle material forms. If he had not prayed in this way, the Lord would have appeared in his heart to accomplish his rescue, without showing a form with hands and feet. This appearance took place by the mercy of the Lord. But even by controlling the mind, no one can understand the greatness of this form of the Lord of the universe, which manifested in many four-armed forms, but which is actually you, the one form of Swayam Bhagavan, who gave me mercy by your own will, who spread through the universe in many spiritual forms, and possess bliss which can be understood only by yourself. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.2. The two verses, though separated by other verses, are explained together since their meanings are connected with each other. The first verse is spoken by Gajendra and the second is spoken by Sukadeva.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.